Coming up on KUCB News, the challenges recruiting police officers to Unalaska and a local visit by the Coast Guard's top official is canceled. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Zoe Sobel with some local news on Thursday, January 10th, 2019. A new police officer was sworn in at Tuesday night's City Council meeting, but even with his addition, the patrol division is just over half-staffed. According to Acting Police Chief Jennifer Shockley, there are six vacant police officer positions, as well as the permanent police chief role. There are no vacancies in corrections or communications. So why is it so hard to keep the department staffed? Shockley says nationally, interest in public safety services, especially law enforcement careers, is at an all-time low.
People do not want to go to a job where they go to work with a target on their back, and that's just the reality these days. We also have a lot of people who are looking for two-week-on, two-week-off contracts. And that does not mean 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off living in the community. What they're looking for is the ability to live in Florida or Idaho and come up to work for 2 weeks at a time.
While the department gets a number of requests for this type of schedule, Shockley says it's not something they can currently entertain because it doesn't fall within the guidelines of police officer contracts. City Councilor Roger Rowland says his knee-jerk reaction is that he wants his officers to be a part of his community, but he also wants the department staffed.
I left town for 6 months, and I left my keys in my car and my house unlocked, and I want to keep it that way. And part of it's thanks to those guys walking the street or driving their cars, as the case may be. And I acknowledge that, and even though I don't like 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, and I may not like some other out-of-the-box things that brought up with, I don't think it's fair to make those guys work 12-hour shifts.
Shockley also is not a fan of the two-week-on, two-week-off schedule, but she says there's a changing workforce.
We have a whole different generation of people who are coming into the workforce, and they have a different set of expectations for what kind of work environment they'll have. And that may be something that we have to look at more closely if we want to be able to retain staffing.
Recruiting to Unalaska is especially difficult because there's a high demand for officers across the state. Shockley says out of more than 50 law enforcement agencies in Alaska, 46 have openings.
We are competing with places that are on the road system, places where the cost of airfare to get to and from a major airport is cheaper, places where people can get to see their family more easily, and places that offer two-week-on, two-week-off schedules.
Shockley says the city is looking at creating short-term, 2 to 3 month contracts for already certified police officers. Additionally, an officer went to Seattle to attend recruitment fairs, which she says the department is interested in repeating in February or March. Applications for police chief and police officer positions are on the city website. The police chief position closes January 28th. It's a new position created when the city council voted last year to separate fire and emergency medical services from the Department of Public Safety. The top official for the U.S. Coast Guard was scheduled to visit Unalaska tomorrow, but his visit was canceled due to the federal government shutdown. A press officer for Admiral Carl Schultz did not respond to if or when the trip will be rescheduled by radio air deadline. The staff of Unalaska's Marine Safety Detachment Unit has been working throughout the 20 days and counting shutdown. The eight workers were last paid January 1st, but at this point, it's unclear when they will be paid again. Their next paycheck should be Tuesday. Despite the federal shutdown, work is continuing on the environmental impact statement for the proposed Pebble Mine. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is the lead agency in charge of preparing the document. The EIS will analyze potential detrimental and beneficial effects of the Pebble project and develop alternatives to the proposed mine plan. The finalized EIS will serve as a tool for federal agencies as they decide whether to permit the copper, gold, and molybdenum mine in Bristol Bay. Army Corps spokesperson John Budnick said, quote, "The development of the EIS is not affected by the federal shutdown at this time," unquote. The Corps of Engineers is under the Department of Defense, which is funded through the end of this fiscal year. However, he also confirmed that the Army Corps now expects to release the draft EIS about a month later than earlier announced. Previously estimated for release in January 2019, the draft EIS is now expected in mid-February with publication in the Federal Register around March 1st. There will be a 90-day comment period after the draft EIS is released. During that period of public review of the document, the Army Corps says that it plans to hold public meetings. The Unalaska Public Library needs your help. As part of the renovation project, there's a community survey looking for your feedback on suggestions. Karen Kresh is the city librarian.
We've heard from the public about some of the big decisions that we need to make for the library building, and now we're starting to drill down to a little more detail, like, what do you mean when you say that you wish the library had a coffee shop? Exactly what does that mean in your mind? Or where would you like the computers in the library to be located? Or do you want us to have windows that open? Or do you want the windows not to be able to open?
If you use the library, you're eligible to complete the survey. Because the renovation should make the library last another 20 years, Kresh wants to get as much community feedback as possible.
I don't know if I'll be around then, but the community will still be around then. So I want to make sure that the library is what the community wants and not just what the staff in this moment in time are hoping for.
The survey takes under 10 minutes to complete, and Kresh says if you have feedback, now is the time to speak up.
This is the part of the project where it's the most likely to have an impact later on when we get to choosing furniture and where the outlets are located. That's not going to be as easy to incorporate large-scale public input.
All of the responses from the survey will be sent to the library's consultant.
Your answers won't go directly to a library staff member. If there's anything you want to say that you think we might not like, it will bypass us and it will still go and be collected as part of the data.
The consultant will compile the responses, which Kresh says will be turned into a report and presented to the city manager and city council. She expects the report will be completed by early next month when the library architects are scheduled to be back in town. The survey is open through Saturday. As of yesterday afternoon, 116 people had completed it. You can also find a link to the survey on our website, kucb.org, as well as paper copies at the library. For the past 20 years, Unalaska Community Broadcasting has provided local news for the Aleutians. To mark the anniversary, KUCB is spending 2019 looking back at our reporters and sharing some of their stories. This month, we're focusing on Jim Paulin, who started the newsroom in the late 90s. Here's his 2001 report remembering Unalaska's original post office.
The old Unalaska post office was torn down last week. It was located between the courthouse and Tino's restaurant. The land will become a parking lot. Jackie Brown sold the property to the Unalaska Corporation a few months ago. OC also owns the adjacent property, and the process is underway for the two parcels to be replatted and combined as a single lot. Longtime local residents shared their memories of the old post office this week. Frank Kelty remembers the old post office back in the 1970s.
It was very functional in the early days. There was probably less than 1,000 full-time residents here. And so it was the post office for the Unalaska side, and the post office for the Mackinac Island side or the Dutch Harbor side was the Chevron fuel dock. And so they'd have the plane would come in, the mail would be separated, and the Chevron fuel manager would pick up the Mackinac side mail and take it to the fuel dock, and he had boxes for the different canneries there, and he'd pick it up there. But on the Unalaska side, since I lived on the Dutch side, I didn't have a lot of exposure until for this one until the bridge was put in 1980. So most of the time it was, you know, we got our mail on the other side. But, you know, when the bridge was in, it was it took over everything. And it was fairly crowded at times. A lot of people just picked up their mail by bags, you know, like for a company, a big company, because they had all they had was the small boxes. So what they'd do is you'd go to the back door of the trailer and they'd give you a bag of mail for, you know, your company, be it East Point or Alyeska or whatever. But it was functional.
Sharon Sprowney Livingston had these thoughts on the old post office.
I think the most obvious memory that stands out in my mind is probably just how small it was and how intimate it seemed when that post office was operating. It just seemed like you were more in contact with your postal workers, and they just seemed to know everybody so much better.
The old post office closed when the new one opened in Unalaska about 7 years ago. It felt a lot different using the spacious modern facility.
Well, it was bigger, more sophisticated. Not so much that it was more sophisticated in operation, it just seemed more sophisticated. It kind of lost that small town feeling because it was so big.
Emil Barakoff recalls the tiny, crowded old post office in Unalaska. Now it's history.
No, it's gone. Yep, another temporary landmark gone.
That was a report from Jim Pollan, the first news director of UCB from October 2001. Join us each Thursday for the rest of the month when we'll be re-airing some of his news stories. You can also read his current work in the Bristol Bay Times Dutch Harbor Fisherman. In the early 2000s, hundreds of victims of clergy sex abuse started to file lawsuits against the Jesuits in Alaska and the Northwest. They're an order of the Catholic Church. By 2009, Jesuits in this region filed for bankruptcy. When it was all over, it was the third largest settlement in Catholic Church history. Northwest News Network's Emily Schwing reveals what's happened to them since.
It's a sunny fall day in October, and I'm in the center of a tiny cemetery.
What's over here?
About 20 minutes outside Spokane with Michael Corey. He's an editor for the radio show Reveal.
I found James Poole. He's on the wall.
He is. Yeah, you're right. There he is. For months, I've been trying to track down this Jesuit priest, James Poole. In the 1970s, he sexually abused an Alaska Native woman named Elsie Boudreau. Poole died this spring.
I'm just going to look here.
I have a list of priests accused of sexual abuse on my phone.
John P. Leary.
And as Mike and I walk through the headstones.
Who is he again?
Former president of Gonzaga.
We figure out that more than 50 of the 640 Jesuits buried
Bernard
here were accused of sexual abuse. That's
Kirkland,
more than 8%.
Dominic Doyle. He was not a good dude. Francis Duffy.
This is the official cemetery for the former Oregon province of the Jesuits.
Thomas Connolly.
That region used to include Montana, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, and Alaska.
They're all here.
Yeah, they're all here. Like, you could spend all day here being like, check, check, check.
Now it's part of Jesuits West. Over the last year, Mike and I looked at online data from Bishop Accountability, which tracks clergy sexual abuse all over the world. In the Oregon province, the number of Jesuits with accusations of sexual abuse is more than three times higher than any other Jesuit province in the nation.
In retrospect, was there something that caused you to, you know, engage and cross the line?
Yes.
In 2003, James Poole was sued by Elsie Boudreau. Her lawyer asked Poole about his upbringing in this deposition from 2005.
I grew up in a broken home and very lonely, had no relationships with girls. My mother always loved me, but I was sort of took that for granted.
In the deposition, Poole says his father was abusive, an alcoholic. He says the Jesuits didn't provide him with adequate sex education. Church and court documents show he sexually abused children and young women for decades. And the Jesuits tried to keep Poole out of the public eye. He retired to Spokane, where he was assigned a job reserved for priests who get in serious trouble, tending the cemetery, this very cemetery, which is also kind of lonely.
So if you go through that iron gate and you just go down that road behind the trees there, I mean, you can see the top of the school through the trees. That's it. I mean, that's a K-12 mm-hmm. school, and you can walk right up to it.
We find kids, girls in plaid skirts, boys in blue sweater vests, playing soccer. It's recess. A few weeks later, I visit Father John Whitney. He's a parish priest at St. Joseph's in the heart of Seattle. Back in 2002, he led the Jesuits' former Oregon province. He's the one who assigned James Poole to work in this cemetery.
Do you think that James Poole went to hell?
What I believe is purgatory. I fear, at least the last time I saw, Jim Poole, that I'm not sure he let go in the sense of owning up to what he had done.
Did the Jesuits create their own purgatory on Earth? After all, court documents, letters, and assignment records show accused Jesuits were moved around the Northwest for decades. When they reached retirement, they went to live comfortably on Gonzaga University's campus. Then they died quietly. They were never criminally charged or prosecuted because the legal framework for that had timed out.
Some of the people deserve to be in jail and be kept from the society.
He means the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits. A few days after James Poole died back in March, Elsie Boudreau sent me a text message. It was short. Hi, Emily. So Poole died on the 6th at 94 years old.
I don't think it's over. Like, I don't think I'll ever, it'll always be in my memory. But what's over is that having to carry that shame, that part is over for me.
These days, she works with victims of sexual abuse in Alaska. She's a social worker and runs her own nonprofit. When she filed her civil lawsuit in 2003, she became the first Alaska Native victim of clergy sex abuse to publicly identify her abuser. Her case was one of hundreds that eventually forced the Catholic Diocese in Fairbanks, Alaska, to declare bankruptcy. 11 months later, civil lawsuits also forced the former Oregon province into bankruptcy. Their $166 million settlement was the third largest in Catholic Church history. But for Boudreau, closure hasn't quite come.
I wish I could say 100% there are no priests out there hurting children. And I don't know that because I don't see them as having done anything to ensure that 100%.
Jesuits West released an updated list that names priests in the region who have been accused of sexual abuse. The people of God rightly demand and deserve transparency on the part of church leadership, reads a statement. But when we looked it over, we couldn't find 13 names that had been previously released by the Jesuits or other dioceses. And some information is inaccurate, including James Poole's death date.
This reporting is done in partnership with Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Zoe Sobel. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. Please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecast.